Ice cold beer.
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, we'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
Good morning and welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elson. Joining me in the dugout, my pal Brian Svensson.
What's up?
We are going to keep our eye on the bullpen phone, hoping that Chris Zuk joins us.
He's warming up.
He's warming up. We gave him the call. He's got to take a few pitches. Got to stretch out. We'll see what happens here. But it is a muggy Friday morning here.
Not a good baseball day.
Not a good baseball day. That is true. That said, there have been some good baseball days of late. If you've been following the major leagues, Xander Bogaerts. I don't know if you saw the highlights of this one.
Red hot.
But two slick double plays and a homer.
Yep.
To drop the Mariners, who, of course, as we talked about last week, are kind of on a weird rise.
Well, it's,
despite the Robbie Cano,
it's kind of really a false rise, though, right? Like, they have more wins in one-run games than they do wins in non-one-run games. They have 22 wins this season in one-run games and 20 in non, and that's like a couple years ago when with the Rangers, well, who made the playoffs with an 8-run differential. Like, that, it's unsustainable.
We say it's unsustainable, but we did see this with, I guess it was the Royals that the year that they went to the World Series.
I guess so, right?
Actually, interestingly enough, that the year that they faced off against the Mets,
yep,
which we will get to. But yeah, no, that basically they were winning one-run games because once they got to the 7th, 8th, 9th, that Kelvin Herrera, Wade Davis lockdown bullpen
just did such a good job. And I guess you could see that with the Mariners too, right? Because they've got Colome and Diaz and I guess when he comes back, big Nick Vincent, and a really good bullpen right now.
Yeah, no, they're definitely getting some good use out of them. So, okay, I teased it. But we want to talk about this. So the audio of an altercation between the umpires and Terry Collins,
yes,
from the World Series. Well, I guess it was from the National League Championship. This was...
No. Yeah,
this was the NLCS.
Correct.
When the Dodgers and
May of 2016.
Mets, 2016. This is the game after Chase Utley makes the intentional slide, which actually, I mean, we've talked about the results of that slide because, of course, there's been a change to the rules in the MLB around, you know, how you can slide into a base.
Specifically because of that.
Specifically from the play. Obviously, the Mets were very angry.
I don't blame
Chase Utley, you know, deservedly so. And so the next game, it was Noah Syndergaard on the mound, and he throws a pitch behind Chase Utley in the third inning, I believe it was.
He was the third, yep.
And
really
gets
early. And he deserved to. You can't throw behind that guy, right?
Well, this is the thing. It wasn't some other player that they just randomly decided to, you know, I don't want to say punish, but like target. But Chase Utley, it was clear what the motivation was.
Oh, God, yes.
It was, you did this to our guy last night.
Didn't get punished.
We're coming back at you.
Yeah.
And we're putting you on notice. And the umps are, of course, trained to watch out for these kinds of things, right? Especially, like, considering how contentious things were coming out of that game with the Utley slide, they know.
Yeah.
Like, it's I mean, this is a thing that the league talks about. You know, the next time something happens, if you guys go after this guy, that's it. We're
oh yeah, no,
we're bringing the hammer down.
There would have been warnings for sure, and yeah. So they toss Syndergaard, and Collins comes out and he's screaming at fill-in umpire at the home plate. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. And then the second base umpire, Tom, I can't remember his last name.
Let's see if I can pull up the details.
Thank you. And so the second base umpire comes in and he's getting in the way of Collins. And Collins is, you know, saying, you know, you got to give us a shot. You got to give us a shot. And there's all sorts of profanity and expletives. And the second base ump does a phenomenal job of handling this. He just basically level-headedly and rationally tells him the situation. And says that, you know, like, the Mets knew the situation and that the umps couldn't allow something like this to happen. And he just does such a good job of handling it. And it makes the umps, like, I had been very upset and complaining about how poor certain umpires have been this year. But this shines a light on the fact that there's a lot of good ones out there. The ump at home plate that made the call made the right decision. And the entire umpire crew handled it perfectly. I don't think they could have handled it any better than they did. And Rob Manfred came out earlier this week after the video had been released and said that they were going to try and scrub it, quote unquote, from the internet. Good luck with that one, Rob. And
I mean, that's a classic MLB move, too. The way that they behave with the internet
is so 1990s.
Hot garbage.
90s. It's ridiculous.
You want to know how to engage younger people? Don't act draconian about sharing of memes and video on the internet.
Take a
page from the NBA.
Let that stuff get shared on 10-second loops and let your fans interact with it and make jokes and memes and stuff. Like, just look at how much, you know, the NBA is exploding in popularity right now because all these mostly teenagers are making these 15-second clips, you know, of highlights from games with all sorts of musical cues to it and jokes and memes and really funny stuff. Game of Zones, Bleacher Report's Game of Thrones and NBA crossover is one of the most popular shows on the internet right now because it's basically just that. And
so it was Tom Hallian was the ump that
does,
actually
he does such a good job.
Collins down.
He does such a good job. And I mean, it didn't end up mattering. The Mets won that series, ended up losing the World Series to the Royals after a heroic Matt Harvey game. And yeah, but I can't, but like it's almost having the Streisand effect in this instance, right? Like them wanting to take this off the internet is making people seek it out
more.
Yeah.
And you know, it keeps popping back up every time it gets taken down. And as you pointed out off air, like this is something that shows umps doing a great job.
Yeah.
And so often the railing against the umps is like kind of like one of the like signature axes to grind
with
Major League Baseball, right?
Like,
I mean,
Hallian
this is why we have call for robot umps for the strike zone.
Give me robo umps or give me death.
But this is, you know, this is where a human obviously is very necessary, is in this social interaction.
Yes.
And he allows Collins to like kind of blow up at him. He doesn't take it personally or get mad at Collins.
No.
He says, you know, like, I'm sorry, you know, we have to do this. I'm going to still have to toss you. Say what you need to say to me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't think Collins got tossed, though. I'm pretty sure.
Syndergaard was ejected, but yeah.
Collins didn't actually get tossed,
although quite honestly, with some of the language
he uses, probably should have. Yeah, I mean, like, Hallian obviously does a good job, and I had never heard anything about him before, and I haven't heard anything about him since, but he does such a good job of handling that, I have a hard time believing he's not one of the better umpires in the league. And yet, I can name you the three worst umpires in the league over the past 5 or 10 years right off the top of my head, right? CB Buckner, Joe West, and Angel Hernandez. Like, it's not hard. I know these guys by name because they're terrible at their job, and the MLB needs to be promoting when guys are doing a good job like this. Stuff like this should be on the internet more often.
Yeah. Well, this is part and parcel of a larger conversation about Rob Manfred and some of his decision making. And he's recently announced some other changes he's mulling. I'm just going to, like, I feel like this is like T-ball, and I'm like the coach, and I'm just going to keep putting the wiffle ball on top of the tee for you and just like let you take hacks at it.
So David Lennon of Newsday reported two separate things. So I guess he's got an inside line onto what Manfred's thinking or talking about in inside meetings. But two separate things. First of all, Manfred is discussing the possibility of making the shift illegal in terms of like defense. And I think that is just one of the silliest things I've ever heard of in my entire life. First of all, like, you don't, this isn't, in basketball, they specifically didn't remove the fact that you could get hacked and have, because you got to make three free throws. Like, you have to, it's part of the game. If the team is shifting on you, it means you have to figure out a way to beat the shift. On top of that, batting average on balls in play is actually up this year over 2013 when there was far, far, far fewer shifts, which means that the shift really isn't affecting batting average on balls in play that much. It's just forcing certain players to adjust their strategy. Guys like Joey Gallo, guys like Freddie Freeman, who got shifted a lot in 2014, took the offseason, changed his approach at the plate, and is even better now than he was then. And I just... You can't... Taking the shift away is just silly. Like, I get that sometimes you need to change the game. I get it. I think that his bringing in of pitch clocks is fine. I think occasionally when you need to change... Like, he obviously changed the baseballs, and that's fine, right? Like, I don't necessarily mind that. But you can't just take away a manager's defensive tools. You can't. It's silly and ridiculous.
Yeah, it's kind of the idea that... hold on. The phone is ringing. Let me just double check here.
All right. Did you want me to talk about the other thing?
Yeah.
Okay. So the other thing that Mr. Lennon reported was that he is really seriously potentially mulling bringing the DH to the National League. And... while I am an American League fan, Mike is an American League fan, and our good friend Jared, also an American League fan, and we love the DH, it has come to my attention that most fans of the NL are vehemently against the use of a designated hitter because they enjoy watching pitchers hit 190 all the time. But
it makes a folk hero out of the folks like Madison Bumgarner who can hit.
His career batting average is still only like 205 or 203 or some nonsense. It's catastrophically low. Congratulations, you hit a couple of dingers now and then, but you still suck at the plate. That being said, a change needs to be made, but I would rather, because the NFL fans seem to really enjoy the DH much more, or the no DH much more, they enjoy pitchers hitting, have the NL's minor league teams not use the DH. Because it is a DH all the way through the minor league team, all the way through the minor leagues. Like, I think it's silly that you're having professional baseball players, pitchers, have their first professional at-bat in Major League Baseball. You know, you're talking about going from potentially hitting maybe in high school against guys who are throwing two-seamers exclusively to, you know, hitting against Madison Bumgarner, against Noah Syndergaard, against Jacob DeGrom, against Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer. Like, you can't. It's awful.
So he took a few extra warm-ups, but we did get Chris Zook in from the bullpen phone. How's it going, Chris?
I'm good. I like this DH discussion here.
Where do you lie on this issue?
I got to be an NL a bit because I was a Montreal Expo fan forever.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this. It is interesting. I think it's the only league that has this. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was the 70s when the DH rule came in, and it was supposed to be temporary. So temporary has lasted almost, 5 decades now. It is very unusual that you still have because it actually really makes a difference, right? When they do the crossover games where you have interleague games, it depends where you play. If you play at an AL park or an NL park, and so it's I actually like the that the pitcher hits. I just think it's they have to make a decision at the MLB level once and for all, either DH for both leagues or no DH for both leagues. I think the half and half, it would be like in basketball if all of a sudden you shoot free throws the same way, and then at the NBA level you got to shoot underhand for the Eastern Conference and then overhand for the Western Conference. Like it just boggles my mind how they can still keep doing this. But the union will never want to lose the DH because that's more money for the players.
Right. And yeah, I do agree with you that that it is an unfair advantage over interleague play. Since the DH has been instituted, the American League has smashed the National League across the board. And whether or not that's specifically because of the DH, I have no idea. But correlation for sure.
It has to make some correlation for sure, because the AL teams are used to playing with nine batters,
yeah.
Right? I mean, yep. You know, there's eight batters in the NL that can hit, and then there's one who's a pitcher. Usually it's a free bingo spot. So whenever you're playing fantasy, you always want to, you know, you want to kind of load up on more NL pitchers a lot, or because they usually get more strikeouts, or they have more potential for strikeouts, because they're you should strike out the pitcher a lot more than you would the DH. It's a crazy system. It's just something that Major League Baseball, I don't think they might ever change, because the union will never go against the DH. But on top of that, like you said, it is very ardent on the NL side, because it goes back to the archaic times of the 1800s. This is the way we did it, and we will always do it this way. And that's, you know, the baseball hasn't broke out of that yet. And we've somehow figured out we can do intentional walk by just holding up four fingers or whatever, but we can't figure this out yet. So I'm at a loss here.
Figuring things out has never been the MLB leadership's strong suit.
Mm-mm. Not been particularly good. I don't really have anything more to say about that, Mike.
Yeah, let's pivot away from that then.
Are we pouring one out for some guys?
We're going to pour a couple quick ones out. One of them from Miguel Cabrera, who sadly his season ended when he ruptured his left biceps tendon while swinging earlier this week. This was going up against Jake Odorizzi. And it's been a few years since this guy was the hitter that he once was, the Triple Crown threat. But, you know, still probably the most potent bat in the Tigers lineup, which isn't necessarily saying anything anymore.
No.
The Little Caesars Empire has... it's the decline and fall of the Little Caesars Empire.
I'm curious if this is, you know, the end of Miguel Cabrera as a good baseball player. You know, because the torn bicep, he's going to have to come back. It's going to take him a while to heal. And then
season-ending surgery.
A while to rehab. You know, it's probably not going to be until very late in spring training next season by the time he's starting to really get back. And he's not young.
No.
So, I mean, if this
35 years old right now, he'll be 36 before the next season.
If this is the sun fading on the Miguel Cabrera empire, it's a shame, because the guy has been an incredible baseball player pretty much his entire professional 16 career.
16-year major league career.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's a sure shot Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned, but the last couple of years have not been kind to him. More and more games missed because of injuries.
Yeah.
Not quite the Pujols era drop-off. As far as hitting when he's been on the field, but definitely not the beast that he once was at the plate.
He won the 2013 to 2014 MVP?
I don't have that on me, sorry.
It would have to be the year he was the Triple Crown winner, right?
Which I think was 2013.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible feat. I mean, that's something that, you know, it was before Ted Williams, I think, was the last one before then in 67, right? So, I mean, that alone gets you. And he's had a very consistent career. I think there's something I read this week, and I'm sorry, I can't remember where I read it, but there is you know, it was about Chris Davis. It was in regards to, I believe,
that contract?
No, shots.
What's that?
The shots, right? There's a bar in Baltimore that's giving away a free shot every single time Chris Davis gets a hit.
Right. But we're the Irv guy. Yeah, that's actually pretty good because he actually would be pretty sober. So the gist of the, I think the article was that there seems to be a precipitous drop as players are getting older now, where maybe they're not in, they have the same infusion maybe back in the early aughts with maybe some, you know, performance, some, you know, allegedly performance enhancing. Is that players are getting older, their bat speeds, you know, especially with the rotation that they got all these flamethrowers coming out of the bullpen now and stuff. And so that might be it for Miggy, right, in regards to, we'll see how he, if he bounces back and stuff. But he really was kind of struggling a bit. I mean, again, also, he's never going to reach the heights of being the Triple Crown winner again. But that said is, yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad because that's, you know, he had a pretty tough year up to that point. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he bounces back. But, yeah, it seems like, you know, as players are getting older, their hitting speed just not matching up what they used to do when they were in their 20s.
So the piece I thought you were referring to, there was a Bleacher Report piece, I think it was last week, talking about is the Chris Davis contract, like the worst current contract in baseball. He's on a 7-year, $161 million deal.
Pujols, right?
The Fangraphs actually just earlier today, Jay Jaffe wrote, Chris Davis might be having the worst season ever. So,
oh my goodness.
F war. So through 67 games, he's at negative 1.9 war.
Oh my God.
Which places him 81,892 out of 81,892 players since 1901.
Holy cow. That's so much negative value, especially because of how much they're paying him. He's basically, like, it's almost like he's costing the Orioles, like, $45 million a season based on how bad he is. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Oh.
So, yeah, pour one out for... I guess don't pour it out for Chris Davis because he's making coin.
Yeah, he's good. Don't worry. He'll be fine.
Pour one out for the Orioles fans. speaking of fans, pour one out for Major League attendance, which is down 6.7% relative to a year ago. So 2,000 people per game.
They're charging too much money.
2 million fans over the course of this period in time who showed up last year have not showed up to games this year.
That's a lot of fans. It's too much money. They're charging way too much money to go to games now. It's, you know, it's price gouging for parking. It's price gouging for tickets. It's price gouging for the, like, there some places. I heard that in Los Angeles right now for the Angels games, it's $16 for a beer, $16 for an alcoholic beverage.
The other thing is there is some like definite tanking going on, and they're seeing some of these teams decrease in attendance. Precipitous because it's pretty clear that they're not fielding a relatively competent ball club.
The White Sox and Tigers both.
Oakland.
Is Oakland tanking?
I mean, they're not tanking, but they're not having great attendance, that's for sure.
That's fair. Yeah, there's the Orioles. The Rays were kind of starting a tank, but have been sneaky good with the starter experiment. That's been really weird. The Mets have had the worst 20-game stretch in MLB history, I think. They're 1-19.
In the American League, there's only four teams with a positive differential on year-over-year attendance.
Yankees.
Houston, the Yankees, the Angels,
oh,
obviously the Ohtani effect there,
yeah,
and the Twins.
No way!
Wow.
Yeah.
And the Twins suck this year.
Yeah, they're scuffling, but Minnesotans believe, I guess. Let's talk All-Star voting before we go here. So, obviously, the voting's underway. This is, of course, you know, classic fan voting online, and if you are lucky enough to get one of those paper ballots at the ballpark. Early leaders, we were talking about this off-air, Brian and I. Gary Sanchez currently leading by a pretty healthy margin for the American League catcher.
I think he's hitting below the Mendoza line right now.
I get having fan voting. I'm not opposed to that, but I think there needs to be like some sort of like measure to offset or ameliorate that in the way that, you know, the NBA All-Star voting and a few other kind of votes put their thumb on the scale a little.
Yeah, I mean, like the NBA has three parts, right? Like it's peer voting and then media voting
and fan voting.
Correct.
Right. So it's like a blended average of the three or something, because, you know, I mean, there's an awful lot of Yankee fans who would put a Yankee on every position, regardless of how well those people are performing.
I mean, remember a couple years ago when the Royals fans attempted to put all those.
Right, when they were hosting.
Yeah.
When the All-Star game was at Kauffman, they basically tried to make sure that
the entire team
was on the starting lineup. And I think it's like a disservice. I mean, I get cheering for your team and wanting your players to be an All-Star, but like at the same time, like I think if you're a Yankee fan, you know Gary Sanchez is not a great catcher or necessarily the All-Star right now.
He's been very, very bad. He is hitting below the Mendoza line. It's 197. That's embarrassing.
I will say this. For catchers, I was just looking at the list here. I think Wilson Ramos is second for the Rays. Brian McCann from the Astros is third. And Salvador Perez from the Royals is fourth. It's not a stellar lineup here, if you get where I'm coming with.
Yeah.
In that position, Sanchez name recognition does get him with the Yankees and stuff. The catcher, if anyone in fantasy knows about the catching position, good luck, because it's been horrible this year, right? It's hard to find some good people who's been consistent all year. That said, I would agree with you, Michael. I think the blending system, I believe what the NBA does is better, because when the Royals try to stuff the ballot, it was a great story, but it was ridiculous, right? I mean, there was guys, Musaka or whatever was there, and, you know, they weren't all-stars, but this system has been flawed a bit. We went back to Selig days where, you know, ties, he didn't want to, we ended up with an all-star with ties. So I don't know. It's for the fans, they say, and that's what they do. I believe you're right. The blending system makes more sense, but some of the, you know, in the catching position, I could let it slide a little bit just because it's not the strongest position out there.
Sure.
At the AL level.
I mean, yeah,
sure.
the candidate's not necessarily a murderer's row of hitters. I mean, it reminds me, like, I think the NBA thing kind of came into play because, was it Zaza Pachulia? The entire country of Georgia tried to vote for him.
It was like, him and Kobe, too. It was the Kobe where Kobe was having an awful season and ended up starting.
I think there was, because I think he was injured for most of the year and he actually somehow got on there, right?
It was the combination. It was the same year. Both of those two guys got in the same year and had no purpose. Neither one of them.
Right, right. In NHL, they had, I can't remember his name
John
now,
Scott.
But, oh, there you go. There you go, right? And so that was, you know, and he actually made the best of it and stuff. But, yeah, you can have these campaigns. It happens. If you, the people can have their say, and they can also kind of ruin the system a bit too, right? So blending sort of makes some sense. I mean, I guess they sort of do that with the extra ones they vote on at the end there. But you take it. I take it more of the grain of salt. At least they don't put in the extra game for the World Series now. So the All-Star game is a bit more exhibition, and I'm fine with that.
Sure enough. Well, head to MLB.com to vote. And if you're a Bench Jockeys listener, I trust you to vote for candidates you think are qualified to play those positions, regardless of what laundry they are wearing. That is it for the Bench Jockeys. We got to hand it over. You're actually going to hear me in a couple minutes after these commercial breaks. I talked to Donovan Woods, who is playing the Winnipeg Folk Festival. It's Festival Express coming up in a minute or two. He was just long listed for the Polaris Prize. It was announced yesterday for his latest record, Both Ways. So tune in for that, and we'll be back here at 11 o'clock next Friday morning. Thanks for joining us here on the Bench Jockeys.